Is this the booth drafting the circuits or Steve's video store? What is it? I sure know what it is. It's Hoobazoo.com.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Ricky, you can walk.
What'd you just say?
He's telling you the truth, man. It's all in your head.
You sick sons of bitches. I mean, you walk in that door on your two legs all fat and cocky and looking at me in my chair, and you tell me it's all in my head? I hope that both of you have sons, handsome, beautiful, articulate sons who are talented and star athletes, and they have their legs taken away. I mean, I pray you know that pain and that hurt.
Don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. Don't you put that on us. You are not paralyzed.
I am so paralyzed.
No.
Rough on him now.
No, he needs to know.
Okay.
He's always crying.
Tough love it is, tough love. Wake up, idiot.
Who's next? Who's got something else for me here? You.
You did steroids. Did it make your balls shrink?
Oh, you think that's funny? How about I show my balls right here and you can tell me if they shrunk, huh?
The following conversation is real. It took place on Tuesday, June 8th of 2004 between a Blonde Star advisor and a subscriber.
Blonde Star emergency, this is Steve. Is there an emergency in your vehicle?
Oh my God. I've locked myself in my car and the keys are on the outside.
Ma'am.
Oh my God.
Ma'am, I need you to calm down.
Okay, it's just that the windows are rolled up and I'm starting to sweat. My keys are on the outside.
Now, your keys are on the outside of the vehicle?
Yes, oh my God.
Now, does your car have automatic locks or...
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Here's what I need you to do. Take hold of the inside of your door handle there. Are you doing this? The shiny thing. Grab the shiny thing.
Okay, I've got it.
Okay, now give that a tug.
Okay.
Did it open?
Yes, oh my God, thank you.
Okay, now what is that noise?
Oh, that's my door alarm.
Yeah, but that only happens if the keys are in the ignition, hun.
Oh my God, you know what?
Your keys are actually in your ignition.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh my God, thank you so much, Blonde Star.
That's why we're here. Do you need anything else?
Blonde Star.
No, that's
always it. On, because you're always blonde.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
This is blasphemy. This is madness. This is a booth.
Staring down, looking at the bloodstained concrete. Hear the dead MC flying at my feet. You took a 9mm rhyme straight to your mind. Damn, I better split. These witnesses my dime, so I make my way up the block. Get to home base and lock them up. Crack the Cavassier and grab the phone. Call one of my troops up. Hope the soldier's homie says, yo, what's up, what's going on? Make it quick, cause I'm trying to get my Stellar on. Nigga, your girl, I'm in the... These lyrical assassins tried to pull a hit, and then boom, came a noise from the other room. It was the boys in blue with the SWAT crew. They got us locked up for lyrical murder. It's one of them charges that you never heard of. It's the booth, the booth, the booth, the booth. Yeah, it's the booth, the booth, the booth. Yeah, we're killing all your podcasts like the HIV virus. You want to battle this kid? Huh, don't even try this. Back the up, think again, count to 10. You want to grab that mic just to get done in? It's the booth, the booth, the booth, the booth. Yeah, it's the booth, the booth, the booth, the booth. Yeah, it's the booth.
Was he African?
African.
No. He was American, and he was like you. He looked just like you.
He's Jewish.
Just Wait, like
okay.
you.
Jew. Okay. It's an odd crime for a Jew to commit.
Yeah, pretty docile.
Okay, so we have an African Jew wearing a hoodie.
No, you don't.
No.
No, that's not what I said. Is that what you heard me say? I said he looked like you. Do you look like an African Jew?
No, I look like a cop.
Yeah.
He was Caucasian.
All right, this is your boy, Sinus One, broadcasting live from the City of Champions. You are listening to The Booth. It is 7:06, and it is July 4 play right now. July Foreplay. Tomorrow is the 4th. It is July 3rd. You are here with us in the booth, and we are going to be holding it down. We actually almost didn't make it on tonight. I was actually on a special covert Black Ops mission into New Hampshire today, and the Granite Street Bridge, the drawbridge on 93, is stuck in the up position. It's been stuck for the last 2 hours. I was able to get off in a government center, and then I came down through Albany, Chinatown, and then Albany Street, and then came up Albany Street into South Boston, came down Dodd Ave into Milton, and then took Adams Street into Braintree, and then I was able to make it home in time to be able to put this show on. Ken was already ready to go, and he was here in Brockton, but I told him the situation and said, you know, you probably, instead of sitting here waiting, you probably want to head home. So Ken, he ended up zipping home and made it home to be on air. So we all just pretty much got here on air probably within the last 5 or 10 minutes, and we were able to get this. Thank God I set everything for, you know, before I left for New Hampshire. I had set everything up so if I had to run late, I'd be able to just jump right in and we could go on the air. I got to thank Jonathan Dolan from Massasoit. He's going to be helping us. We're going to be trying to get a show live at Massasoit, hopefully next Tuesday. We'll see what happens with that. We had a T-shirt winner last week, Eric Dupree. He won a T-shirt from ILoveBostonSports.com. My phone is dead from driving all day. So once my phone comes up, if you guys are monitoring the chat, just let me know what's going on. We got to pick a T-shirt winner today. And I just got to let people know, if you win a T-shirt, you have to go down to the South Shore Plaza store. Kind of ASAP, because we really want to get that picture of the winner out there so we can share it through all of our social media, because that's how this whole thing works with sponsorship. And we've already got 3 winners, so we've got to get these 3 winners out there. And, you know, I got to say thank you to ILoveBostonSports.com for holding us down with this giveaway every week for a T-shirt. So a lot of stuff going on. I got an event to DJ coming up on Friday night, and I'm going to be doing the Brockton Bay State Bucks. I'll be doing the Bay State Bucks again, Ken, this year. Their football games at Bridgewater State University, and they've got 3 games at Brockton. So will you be able to hang around on a Friday night? And
yeah, I might. I may.
Call a football game with me? Okay. Well, I'll let you know the dates once they're announced, and we'll go from there. Now, this is weird because – oh, okay, never mind. In one Skype, I can see you on your tablet thing, and then the other Skype, it had the picture, but then it just fixed itself.
Yeah, I went to my computer. For those of you who don't know, I went out and bought a new tablet the other day because I was feeling depressed, and I did some retail therapy. However, unfortunately, for reasons which are not important to the conversation, I couldn't log in to my computer, but I could log into my tablet. However, when I did that and I logged in the computer, I finally got the computer, it was like reverberating. So I shut one off, and now I've got to change all the passwords. So I'm doing that as we speak.
Is it Windows 10? Is the tablet Windows 10? Like a Surface?
Yeah.
Oh, you should be able to sync your password across all your devices without having
I'm sure I can somehow, but I'm doing it. I'm old, going in old school and manually putting it in.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it's hot.
So
I'm dying of heat here. The kids have already left to go over to Don's mother's house to go swim. And we did have some big news today out of Washington. Ken, you were ready to trumpet the bit on that one. Are you ready to talk about that? Or
hell yeah. Well, yeah, there's a bunch of news out of Washington, but I'll start in chronological order. There's 2 things that came out. Once again, the Booth proposes and the country disposes. Last week, we spent a lot of time talking about the indefinite detention on the border for asylum seekers, and yesterday, a judge in Washington, D.C. issued a permanent injunction against that, saying that each individual person who is held while for seeking asylum must be given an individual hearing, which is something we covered last week and we talked about ad infinitum. So once again, go Booth.
And what else? There was a couple other things that came down today.
That's okay. Want to talk? The other thing is the Senate Intelligence Committee, which oversees all 16 of our intelligence agencies, came out with a rather lengthy report saying that, yes, they have confirmed that Russia did interfere with the 2016 elections, and it did it with the purpose of helping Donald J. Trump become president, and it did, in fact, help him become president. They stopped short of saying there was active collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, but they are now backing up all 16 intelligence agencies. This is a huge blow to Trump, who's not complaining this is fake news, a Democratic conspiracy. Now one of Trump's most loyal soldiers is saying that it, in fact, did happen. Last but not least, I don't know if you saw this, but apparently there's news out of Washington that Pruitt, who's the EPA chief, went to Trump earlier this spring to ask him to fire Jeff Sessions and replace him with Pruitt. And then Pruitt said he'd fire Robert Mueller and that resigned within 120 days because a cabinet-level position can be held by a temporary appointee for 120 days prior to Senate confirmation. Pruitt said he was then going to go back and run for governor of Oklahoma. And thank God, apparently someone in the Trump administration had a brain in their head and told them that was a really bad idea. So.
And, you know, let's go back to this whole the Russian thing and the election and all that stuff. And again, till this day, you know, I still feel like, okay, it happened. The Russians did, you know, have their part in social media of, you know, swaying the public. But till this day, I still believe that the swing, the moment of change in this election was when he decided to reopen the email investigation just 3 days or 4 days prior to the election. And I think that was key. That was big. And that was the big swing. That was the whole moment undecided until the Michigan vote. Then the Michigan vote solidified everything.
What they're saying now is, and this is what the story is and what has been buried, that this was a long-term thing. This was not – emails had nothing to do with it. What they're saying is this was a long-term thing thought up by Russian intelligence to topple. They did not want Hillary Clinton.
Oh, no, I know that. I'm saying –
that's what I'm trying to tell you. The polling after polling says that had no effect. It was already in the bag. People were going to vote for Trump, had made the decision prior to reopening the email investigation, and it was done because of this collusion.
I don't know if there was collusion, but we know that the Russians had devised this plan long ago. They've been doing it in other countries a lot longer than they were doing it here. They perfected it elsewhere in Europe, and then they tried it here in 2016. They obviously had a big impact, and then, of course, then they continued to do it in other places around the world. So this is not some fly-by-night operation. This is a KGB special. This is something that they've been perfecting for years and years. But because they're able to exploit problems in our electoral system and safeguarding in our electronics, they're able to do that. I think what Keith's point is, and I think there's some value to it, is what other contributing factors were there? We know that the Russian effort that went on for even longer than the Trump campaign, but certainly when they identified the person they liked, you know, caused damage. There was all these fake news items that they posted all over social media suggesting bad things about Hillary Clinton and fomenting her scandal, which the email thing was a real scandal, but they made it worse than it was, and they brought up other things that weren't true to do that. So yes, obviously that had a lot of damage. I think it's a good point, though, that what Comey did, not once but twice, you know, in July, that was a really harsh public statement, condemnation that he gave when he first started talking about the emails. And then he did it again, you know, a week to 10 days before the actual election, which was I think it was a devastating blow to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, because she had the lead. She was up by like a 40-point margin, right?
No, absolutely not.
It wasn't that big, but she was certainly was higher than she finished. The difference is this, you know, that certainly didn't help. Obviously, what the Russians had done for a much longer period of time did a lot of damage. I think it may be hard to know, and it'll be interesting to see what books and articles come out, and it'll be 10 years from now before we get any kind of definitive guidance on this. It'll be interesting to see what you know, political scientists can determine about what were the things that were most effective in helping his campaign and hurting her campaign and influencing the American population. Were there segments of the population that were more susceptible to these type of things than other segments? There's a lot of stuff that we need to learn about this. The immediate thing is to safeguard our election systems. That's the thing that has to be done right away, and that's the thing that the president has been so disappointing about, is forget that he doesn't want to admit. I mean, obviously he's not going to admit what he and his campaign did, whatever that may be. But he certainly had no right to refuse all this time that Russia did something. We knew that. We knew that before he took office, and the intelligence agencies. And, you know, I commend the Senate for the report that they issued today to confirm all that. But the issue is we are way behind because the president has been denying the country the opportunity, because Homeland Security works for him, as do others, the Federal Election Commission, whatever, in trying to fix this. We have a big problem safeguarding our systems. There was a good piece on Axios that they talked about the vulnerabilities coming up to the midterms. If people haven't read that, it's a very interesting piece. On safeguarding our electoral system. So that's the thing that we're really far behind on. The rest of it we're going to learn, but we can't undo it at this point. But let's learn about it in as much detail as we can.
I agree. But however, if you look at the polling data, if you've got to remember, one of the things the polling data did very poorly was weighting the various electoral states and how if individual states would vote and how that would throw off the electoral college. If you look at the polling data, it was pretty much spot on. They predicted her to win by X amount. They were within 2 or 3 points on a national popular vote level.
Yep.
Where they screwed up was Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida. However, when you dissected that polling data, and I've read numerous articles, when they actually break it down by age group and likely voter, the people who were supporting Trump before the emails and after the email scandal didn't change. It had almost no effect. Most people were going to vote for Trump, made up the decision before Comey reopened the investigation.
No, but it was damaging. Did it make Democrats stay home?
Oh, no question, it was damaging.
You know, because you had 77,000 votes in 4 states that made the difference, and so any little thing could have tipped the scales. And that's why I think, you know, at some point we need to really learn what happened on these multiple levels.
It shouldn't have been that close. The only reason it was that close was because she was losing votes ahead of the time. She had no ground game in Pennsylvania. Her ground game in Ohio was anemic. And Florida was a joke. The problem is the only reason it was that close – and here's the thing. And I say this as someone who's worked on a lot of campaigns. She should have blown them away. It should never have been that close.
That's right.
And she really blew it. And she blew it for the same reason Al Gore blew it in 2000. This is the way she ran her campaign, and this is the way Mara Healey blew it to Charlie Baker in Massachusetts. She ran as a middle-of-the-road candidate, figuring that all the liberals and progressives would come out in force, and she'd be able to attract the moderate voters. And she took her base for granted, who did not come out for her at all. The moderates were split, leaning a little bit towards Trump, but not that much. And that was the problem. This is the problem with all – what's the old joke from Arkansas? The only thing in the middle of the road are yellow lines and dead armadillos. And that was the problem. That's why – otherwise, if she had come out and ran a campaign like Barack Obama had run or Carter or Kennedy and said, this is who I am, this is what I need to do, she would have crushed Trump. Crushed him like an overripe tomato, but she didn't. And people can talk about the emails all they want, and they can talk about the Bernie bros all they want. The fact is, Hillary Clinton blew that election. She needs to take responsibility for that.
I agree. The biggest factor why she lost was herself. She was a bad candidate. She ran a terrible campaign, and that's the biggest factor that goes into it. If no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I think that regardless of whether she wanted to come across as more progressive or more moderate, the fact is she never staked out positions, period. I think there is a path to victory trying to be the center left as opposed to the far left candidate, just like for Republicans, you know, to go center right versus far right. And oftentimes the people who capture the imagination of the middle tends to pick up the votes to win. And Trump certainly did that, but I think that he did that not by staking out positions. He did that by speaking to big sections of the population that she chose not to speak to. And so, you know, not only did she not have the ground game, she didn't have the message. Her campaign never had a message. You know, talk about other campaigns, even unsuccessful campaigns at least had a message out there. Even Barry Goldwater had a message, and he lost in the biggest upset ever. But the fact of the matter is she did none of that. So, yeah, the whole thing, you know, falls squarely on her and Robbie Mook and that whole team over there. But you know, the other thing is, but we still need to learn about these external influences, because I think it's important to know. And quite frankly, maybe people can be held accountable. I'm not sure.
Oh, I could agree with you more. There's no question about that. We need to look at these external influences, and people, in my humble opinion, excuse me, will eventually be held accountable, except not just under this administration. But we're playing the long game here. There was an interesting comment that someone made that if the Democrats do take the House, and now there's a possibility, although R-Squared and I have disagreed what how big a possibility, that the person who will be heading up the House Financial Services Committee will be the new chair, with the power to subpoena in Trump's tax and business records, is none other than Maxine Waters, who has been Trump's chew toy number one.
Yeah.
So imagine if Maxine Waters becomes the chair and starts subpoenaing in all the business records. And Sinister One, you raised this point, I think, 8 or 9 months ago, maybe even before the election, about Trump's unsavory business dealings with several beauty pageants in Russia.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I said all the stuff that went on at the Trump Taj Mahal, all that stuff that went on in Atlantic City, all that stuff that went on at his casinos. You know, we know he was a shrewd, ruthless businessman when it came to real estate, but he was also big into gambling. He was big into sports. So, you know, that shrewdness had to carry over into that. And, you know, his towers were already under FBI surveillance for Russian mobster influencing and gambling, you know, laundering money for fights and things like that. So, again, you know, we may very well still see Trump caught up into something like that.
It'll be a very interesting thing, because really two issues. Number one, he's going to refuse to provide that documentation, and we'll see what Congress is going to do about it. You know, if they're already going to do other things to him, then they tack this on. But it'll be interesting, you know, by itself, you know, what they do, because we know he's not going to release it. He's simply not.
Nope.
And the other thing is, you know, Maxine Waters hasn't done herself any favors either, because, you know, from day one, from the election, even before we knew about the Russia stuff, she evidenced a strong bias against him and her public refusals to go to the inauguration and everything else. I'm not saying that I disagree with everything, but she has taken public positions from day one, first and foremost, before anybody else. And so she's got a demonstrated bias against him. And I don't think that that's going to help in the long run trying to make the case, especially if she becomes the committee chair, because he's counting on that, and he's ready for it by, you know, he didn't even have to plant the seed. She did it to herself the day after the election. But, you know, it'll be interesting how that plays out.
Yeah, she's a fiery, loose cannon, I'll tell you. I've seen her many times, and she, you know, I know the Democrats have had to sometimes say to her, hey, reel it in. You're way out there, you know, and she's outlandish at times. I mean, she makes good points. I mean, when this whole thing was in the beginning, when Donald Trump first got in the office and they had this thing about empowering women and women's rights in the workplace and stuff like that, you know, she came out and she came right at Trump and she made some great points and she had a good voice. But then since that time, she's kind of been kind of overboard with the things that she's done and have said. I immediately followed her on Twitter. And I've had some moments where I've had to shake my head and be like, yeah, you're kind of overstepping your boundaries. Like, just for example, just last week we had this tragedy with the shooting at the news station. And there was a meme going around blaming Trump because Trump was in Maryland calling out the media and saying, you're the bad guys. And I'm like, well, that's kind of a reach. He was actually in South Carolina. The shooting happened in Maryland. There's two different places. There's no connection there. That's a reach. So anybody who is saying
hold on a second. No, 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 no.
It's a reach.
It's not a reach. He has been talking to his supporters since day one, calling the media the enemies of the public. And there's a big difference. And he called up. When during the campaign, he said, maybe you Second Amendment people can take care of it. He's used coded language, and I'm sorry. I agree with you. She's been off the reservation a couple of times. that time she was on the reservation. And he has created a level of fear and intimidation and calls for violence against anyone who dares criticize him. And I'm sorry, he has not dialed it back at all. So he has to own that. He has created a climate. I'm not saying he called for direct action against a journalist, because he didn't, but he's created a climate of fear, intimidation, and violence.
I agree,
he's got to own
that. I've said that. When people are asking how come we see so much racial stuff these days, I said because he gave them a voice. And I had a buddy I got in a real big debate over, and he's like, no, it has nothing to do with him. I'm like, yes, it does. I says, when he had them on his campaign trail all the way up until October, he gave them a voice. And then when he realized that it was bad press and it was starting to cost him votes, he started to make sure that those people were not on his campaign trail. But guess what? That was October. They were already getting ready to head into November. The damage was already done. These people were on his campaign trail since May, and the damage was done. They already had a voice. They were out there in public. They were at all these rallies. You saw them with their signs. You saw them with their paraphernalia. You saw them with their flags. And he gave them a voice, and I've said that, you know, that's why the things are the way they are. And you know, you see.
Yeah, but he has never disowned them. He's never called them out. Exactly. He's never distanced himself. So the idea that he they're no longer at his, you know, front and center at his rallies, that's no. He's still in bed with these people. Okay.
Or they dumped a lot of money into his campaign.
Right. So this idea, I'm sorry, Maxine Waters' comment on that is, I think, is wholly appropriate.
Okay.
They. He owns that, and I'm sorry.
R-Squid, your thoughts?
Well, you know, for better or for worse, the gunman in this Maryland shooting obviously had an ongoing beef that went back years with this particular newspaper over an article that did on him about him harassing a woman and all that. So, you know, we'll see how much of that is limited to their prior interaction and whether or not he was inspired by, you know, the climate that President Trump has been creating with his, you know, daily attacks on the media. I think that there's a point there that even if it's unrelated to him, which this may be entirely related to that story he's been fighting, there were lawsuits and harassment claims and everything between them. But even if this was entirely related to that, the climate exists and the president is solely responsible for it. Ken's right. He has to own it because of his daily rhetoric saying that the press is the enemy of the people. Words like that are dangerous and powerful and inappropriate no matter what the context. And so, you know, the fake news, calling out reporters, you know, where reporters had to have security to go cover his rally. You know, this is something we've never seen before in this country. We've had people attack the media before, but never like this, never an ongoing campaign. And what he's doing is absolutely disgusting and maybe among the most reprehensible things he's doing as president. I mean, policy, we can agree and disagree and debate and change it down the road. But what he's doing now is a very serious danger to the country, and this rests on his shoulders and his alone.
Well, that was the point that I was making, and that, you know, I know I don't want to keep hopping on Trump week after week, but like I said, I saw this. I remember when he first called out CNN as fake news, and I remember texting Ken like, "Oh my God, did you hear what he just did?" And I said, "Ken," I said to him, "That is crazy." And I said, and then he came out, and then it was NBC was the second one. And I remember texting Ken right away again. And I said, Ken, I says, he can't do this. I says, and at that time, he was a media darling. A lot of the media outlets liked him. But then, like I said to Ken, I says, how many of these outlets are going to say, whoa, he just threw that label on them that fast? That could be us. And sure enough, a lot of media outlets were like, they started sticking up for CNN and NBC because they were like, whoa, 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 you need to fact check. And then it turned into this fact check. And then every time they saw him talking, all these outlets were talking about the lies and what's not facts. And then here we are today. This is where we are today, where a majority of the media is here to make sure they're a thorn in his side. And, you know, every now and then Fox will say something about him, but It has become a crazy climate that we've never seen before. This is
well, and what's what's fascinating is yesterday he even called the Wall Street Journal the fake news. And the Wall Street Journal is a conservative paper, always has been, owned by Rupert Murdoch, which is one of his supporters from Fox News Day. So that's an interesting addition for the president, that even the Wall Street Journal is fake news now.
Yeah, he called them that before. When the stocks first dropped, he had said it was back in December. When they took that big tumble, he had said that they were fake news. And I was like, whoa. I'm like, really? Okay, Wall Street Journal is fake. And then the Post, WAPO was another one he called – he labeled them for fake news too.
Well, you know why? You know why he's going after the Wall Street Journal?
Well, I mean, he really shouldn't be. I mean, these –
Well, do you know why? The reason is simple. The Wall Street Journal has been for many years big proponents of free trade.
Mm-hmm.
They were proponents of free trade even before it had a name. The tariffs, they've been very against tariffs, have been for years, and they came out very strongly against Trump's tariffs. They thought they'd be idiotic, and they're turning out to be right. I can't believe I'm agreeing with the Wall Street Journal of all things. This is how crazy it is. I'm agreeing with the Wall Street Journal on something. And so that's why he's turning on them.
But see, here's the crazy thing. He's using this fake news thing. He's using it as a political weapon, to be honest. And that's dangerous.
Right.
That's because
it's incredibly dangerous.
Here's what's going to happen. He doesn't realize this, but when it comes time for re-election, all of these outlets that he called fake news, he doesn't realize the crap storm that he has unleashed, because all of these outlets, they're going to look for something to topple his rerun for election. Every outlet that they're all just sitting back and they're saying, okay, you can call us fake news. Go ahead, have it. But in 2 years, we got your ass. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of media outlets, their editors, their senior editors, they're all sitting back and they're just saying, you know what, give me this. And I wouldn't be surprised if WAPO or Wall Street Journal or somebody, New York Post, or somebody has that golden ticket that they're just that they got it. You know what I'm saying? And they're just holding on to it because they know in 2 years it's what's going to sink his ass. And I know I have this feeling that there is somebody out there that's sitting on it and they're just waiting for the right moment.
Well, yeah, his name is Michael Cohen, and he's talking to Robert Mueller. I think that he's the guy with the keys to the kingdom.
We'll see. And if he talks,
we will see.
We'll see.
It's game over for everybody in the Trump administration. That's the key thing you need to worry about, because he's got remember, he knows all the details for everybody. And that means Trump, that means Pence, that means Pruitt, and that means Sessions.
Are the Republicans aware that he's going to have to fight he's going to have to fight the media on this re-election in 2 years?
Oh, yeah.
Are they fully aware of that?
I think they're fairly aware of that, and I think they're praying to God that they hold on to the House and the Senate, because if they don't hold on to the House and the Senate, no one's going to care what they say, because Mitch McConnell will be the majority leader and no one's going to quote him. Mr. McConnell has been able to control the agenda, and Paul Ryan has been control the agenda because they're setting it. But if they become the minority leaders, no one will care what they have to say, and it'll be all Trump all the time. Mm. You know, the other thing we need to talk about tonight, and I see we're half past, was why Justice Kennedy is stepping down.
He's old.
No.
That's what we thought originally, but that's not the case.
Justice Kennedy's
son appears to be Trump's private banker. And it's very possible that Kennedy could come under investigation after he leaves the bench for undue influence, because if he talked to his son about any of the rulings he made on Trump's executive orders or other things, that could come in and invalidate them, because that would be a violation of federal law and judicial ethics.
Mm-hmm.
The theory is, you know, Kennedy wants to leave town before this blows up in everybody's face.
Right.
The theory was, here's the thing, they wanted to confirm somebody would be Trump friendly before the November election. I don't see how they're going to be able to do it, because they've got 2 weeks left in July and they go on the August recess.
Mm-hmm.
Then they come back after Labor Day and they've got September and October to have someone nominated, have him get through the confirmation process of the Judiciary Committee and a full vote in 8 weeks.
Yeah,
really tough.
Yeah, you won't see him until after January.
So, and that's true, and the Senate flips, and again, possibility, we don't know. If, here's the thing, Do you know who becomes judiciary chairman if the Democrats win?
Who?
Pat Leahy of Vermont.
Oh, that's right.
Pat Leahy of Vermont, I used to work – in full disclosure, I used to work for him many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Leahy, you know, he's old school. And he was infuriated when they pulled this crap on Martha Garland. And if you think he's going to get – let one of Trump's nominees come in, he's going to say, screw you. I'll hold it up for 2 years. I'm chairman.
Mm.
I'm going to look to the next election cycle. So we could have a Supreme Court with only 8 justices for the near future.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing is, under U.S. law, and this is what I didn't realize, someone had explained to me, is a lot smarter than I am, Justice Kennedy's retirement does not become official until we have confirmed a new justice.
No, that's not true.
That's what I thought.
No, traditionally, the justices do it that way. He did not. He said effective the end of July, he's out.
That's what I thought he did, but he said apparently they can't do that. Apparently there is some little old law that I didn't hear about that unless the justice is medically infirm, removed for cause, a Supreme Court justice doesn't apply to other members of the bench, only the Supreme Court. They can't step down unless they have their official retirement. They don't because they get what they call senior status. They stay on the court, but they're non-voting member. They don't move to that status unless a conferee has been confirmed by the Senate. So theoretically, Kennedy could stay, even though he's not to his retirement, could stay on for 2 years.
Everything you say is correct. However, in the letter that he wrote, as reported, he said he is not seeking senior status. He was leaving. He was getting the hell out of D.C. at the end of July. So I don't know if that was reported incorrectly, and I don't know if he's claiming that he's leaving no matter what the rules. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
There's
a chance that he's going to be gone.
Right. Physically. I agree with you. I mean, that's exactly what he said, and I couldn't agree with you more. And that's why I was having this conversation with my friend of mine in D.C. He said, Ken, we never had this happen. You're right. I don't know what we can do. I don't know if the other 8 justices are going to go grab him, tie him to his chair and say, you're not leaving. I have no idea. It's one of those things. Well, what if he does leave? Can you force him to come
back?
That's
my point. How serious was he about leaving?
I don't know. But technically, the seat doesn't, you know. So, I mean, that could be a real interesting thing. You could have a series of 4-4 ties because he's been the deciding vote in a number of cases. And here's the other interesting thing. Which we've got a couple other justices who are not in good health. We got Ginsburg, not in good health, although she hasn't been in good health since she got on the court. Rumors are that Roberts is not in good health, although he's relatively young, but he's been very quiet of recent, hasn't written a lot of opinions, and the opinions that he does write are incredibly narrowly drafted, that they don't sweeping things. So it looks like the court is basically taking itself out and doesn't want to make a decision until after the next election cycle. I'm talking about the 2020 cycle. Because if you read the decision, and we went over this with the Colorado Baker case, I'm using a description of a job as opposed to a formal name. Is everyone clear on that? The decision, both R-Squared and I read it, and we agreed on that it was incredibly narrowly drawn. The decision didn't say that a person can deny services to someone based on sincerely religious beliefs. It punted that issue. What it said was that this individual was not treated appropriately and the case needed to be remanded. Then we got the executive order case, which said that watered it down to the point of basically it's 2 countries – they're on the list, and everybody's got an Article 3 right to appeal their exclusion. So basically nullifying it. So it looks like they're not giving broad decisions of what they've done in the past, which we could be seeing in the next 2 to 3 years. They're simply going to decide, we're not going to make any decisions of any major policy note until after the 2020 election cycle, or at least after 2018. That could be very interesting.
Damn. So – switch gears here. We got some sports stuff that Ken dropped in the chat. We got some big sports news on that has happened since the last 48 hours. Major trades were made to the Lakers. LeBron James from the Cleveland Cavaliers signed a $153 million deal with the Lakers.
Okay, can we officially say the LeBron James is an NBA money whore? Can we officially say that now?
I've always said on this show that he's a mercenary. He is a mercenary. He's,
no, no, no.
He's broken the hearts of Cleveland. He went to Miami. He came back to Cleveland. And yes, he got them a championship. But now he, you know, he lost the series, the Eastern Conference. Well, they won the Eastern Conference Finals, but they lost the championship to the Golden State Warriors. You would think he would stay around and try to, you know, build and get back there. But nope. You know what? He knows he got lucky against the Celtics. And he says, okay, let me head over to the Lakers, which is where he really wants to be. He wants to be that star under the bright Hollywood lights with Jack Nicholson sitting there cheering him on. And, you know, now you've got Lonzo Ball's dad over there. Let's see if they get along. Him and Kobe are sharing hugs. And I'm like, wow, that's the fakest hug that I've ever seen. Because I can tell you right now, if Kobe was still on that squad, the Black Mamba would not be wanting to play with LeBron James. He would not want to be sharing that time. He barely could stand Shaq. So it's nice to see all the fake smiles out there. Let's see what happens. Let's see what the West does. They've got all the major players over there. And you know what?
I think you raised an excellent point. LeBron James is not a team player.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about him. And I don't think he's going to do very well with the level of talent that is on the Lakers. They're not going to want to defer to him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he wants. So it could be a very bumpy ride for you LA fans. And trust me, I'm not shedding any tears for any of you LA Laker fans. You're the phoniest fans in the world.
They're building a nice squad. They're bringing Rajon Rondo over there. But we all know here from the Celtics that Rajon Rondo is not an easy guy to get along with. Rajon Rondo did go to Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken, for a real short period of time. I mean, that was like real short. And,
like what, 3 days?
Yeah, I don't even think it was 3 months. I think he was injured when he went there, and then I think it was almost the same thing that happened with Isaiah Thomas. It was almost that same route.
I spent more time in Cleveland than Ronjo did.
Yeah, okay. I don't think he was there.
And that was going through airports.
Yeah. And so we'll see what happens. And then Ken dropped in the chat here, which is, I was in a debate with someone about this one. The suspension for Julian Edelman has been upheld. He will have to take those 4 games. And to be honest, I'm going to tell you guys, I feel the 4-game PED suspension is the biggest farce in the NFL. And I'm going to explain why I feel it's the biggest farce in the NFL, just from the Patriots alone. So you got a guy like Julian Edelman, who is one of your top 10 wide receivers in the NFL. He's suspended for 4 games. Now, we've said it before on this show. The first 4 weeks of football in the NFL is where you start to figure out who the pretenders and the contenders are. Those 4 weeks are just pretty much a toss-up. You've had teams that have come right out the gate, and they'll be 4-0. But by week 5, they've been exposed, and they're on the losing slide on the way down. Patriots, on the other hand, the same thing. They lost a blowout to Kansas City. Everybody wrote them off. They were talking about trading Tom Brady, and we were like, look, hold on, guys. It's 1 game. The Patriots went on to win the Super Bowl that year. What is happening here is that Welker's healthy. So Welker is now getting an extra 4 games to rest and come back in week 5 when it really matters to link up with Tom Brady with receptions. But the Patriots have drafted and signed many wide receivers who are now going to get that look in 4 games. In those 4 games, you can have a guy that could potentially be a guy that can make that one big pass in the Super Bowl later on. So for me, I feel that this is the biggest farce in the NFL, this 4-game suspension for PEDs. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. If you really wanted this suspension to hold any type of weight, to hold any type of fear in the players and the team, dump the first 4-game suspension, take the schedule, put the schedule of that team in the hat, and then you pull 4 games from that hat, and that's what they'll serve. If Julian Edelman has to lose a Week 16 game because of a PED, guess what? You're going to second guess what you put in your body, because you definitely don't want to hurt your team by being out in Week 16. I think this is how it should be. I think if Roger Goodell is listening, you need to change it up and let's make this suspension hold. It goes the same for running backs. We saw this in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh lost their running back last year for the first four games of the season. He was one of the top running backs for the season last year. Why? Because he had that four games of rest. He's a healthy guy sitting out. He's practicing. He's running reps. You just can't be at the field, but you can still work out. You can still run reps. You can still catch the ball. You can still stay in shape. You're just not getting any snaps, no gameplay. And I think it's the biggest farce in the NFL. I think it's a mockery of the system.
Well, the entire NFL substance use policy is a mockery. So it's a mockery of a mockery of a mockery. I agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the other thing. Remember the last time a major Patriot player got a four-game suspension? Mm-hmm. What happened to Mr. One? I'm trying to remember.
Went to the Super
Bowl. Did they win a Super Bowl? Yeah, they did.
Yeah. And for those who are pushing the doom and gloom because he's missing four games, Julian Edelman didn't take one snap last year and the Patriots still went to the Super Bowl. So,
right.
Go figure. Anybody who's coming with that nonsense.
And here's the thing. I am not, and granted, I'm not a chemist. I don't understand PED. I understand that the line between an authorized PED and an unauthorized one is thin, practically non-existent. But I haven't heard exactly what he took that was banned.
Yeah, I didn't hear either. And the thing is that the list constantly changes so much.
Right, exactly.
They've had stuff go on, then come off and go on. It's very confusing. You could simply take an allergy. I forget what allergy pill it is out there, and you can end up failing your PED for a certain type of allergy.
Not only that, there are a lot of different medications, while by themselves are legal, if you mix them, are illegal. So, I mean, come on, people.
I think what the league should do, if you have an injury such as Julian Edelman and you're rehabbing a season-ending injury, the PED should be allowed for the purpose of healing in the off-season or long-term injuries. I think if it's a short-term injury, let's rest up and let's get the guy back in one or two games. But I think if a guy is gone for the season – and he really is trying to get it, because this is his career. If he really wants to get back, I think you monitor and then you allow certain things. That's my opinion. I don't know about you guys. R Squid?
Well, I think there are a couple of things at play here. First of all, your first point was that you didn't think being suspended for the first four games of the season was a sufficient enough deterrent. So, you know, I suppose if they randomly picked four games out of the hat – that could be. I mean, the other thing they could do is make it worse and say, okay, first six games. So be careful that if it's not a good enough deterrent, what they might do about it. More importantly, I think you have a good point, or there's another good point, is these things change all the time. There's such a market out there that there may be room for honest mistake. I'm not sure that I buy that, but there is certainly a confusion or a knowledge issue out there, that's for sure, as far as, you know, when substances are coming on and off the list, there's got to be an opportunity for players. You know, it's their obligation to be informed, and teams have to put that information out, and the league has to publish it to the teams. But players have to be given a certain amount of time to, you know, to get off that substance or find something else. So,
right.
You know, there's certainly a fairness thing here for something that's come on and off. Now, again, we don't know what he used. It could be something that's been banned for 3 years, in which case then – there's nothing you can say about it. He was on notice and he chose to do it, mm-hmm. But we don't know.
He's guilty as charged.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, but this is also the problem. The NFL disciplinary, I'm loathe to call it a system. You know, it's like a Rorschach test. I'm really screwing
up. Rorschach.
Thank you, test. It's whatever, you know, you look at it, it's whatever it is you see. I mean, if R Squared and I had to practice law based on the NFL's disciplinary system, we'd pull our hair out because we said, mm-hmm. Well, where's the law? What are the standards? What can I do? What can I do? It seems to be changed every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I had the problem with, well, many problems. And I think this is a big F you to Tom Brady and the Patriots. And he couldn't get Tom Brady, so now he's going after Julian Edelman. Edelman for a four-game suspension for a PD in the offseason? Oh, come on. Guy beats his girlfriend on camera, and he gets a one-game suspension, then it gets lifted.
Mm.
You know, What do you think is more severe?
Yeah,
well, I mean, the PED thing is supposedly a player safety issue, so that becomes a little bit more serious as opposed to – I have no tolerance for the off-field misconduct. I think it should all be actionable, but I'm just saying that the PED thing is a very – goes right to the safety issue.
Excuse me. This is the NFL we're talking about. If they're going to try to claim the high ground on player safety, I'm sorry. I'm throwing the brown flag.
They need to fix it.
I mean, they couldn't care less about player safety. They care about looking like they're caring about player safety.
Well, there you go.
And I think that's a totally – but that's a whole – we don't have time. That's a whole different show. But the NFL and their concerns or lack thereof – of player safety and the in-house medical treatment that has kept players in the dark.
Not that these players would care. We'll be back to our NFL shows pretty soon. I can't wait.
Yes. Mm. By the way, speaking of NFL shows and stuff like that, so just so because there are two teams in the NFL which I currently have a soft spot for. One is the Detroit Lions because I've always had a soft spot for them because I think they were cursed. Whatever they do, they can't seem to do anything, and they play in Detroit, and they've got a very loyal fan base. So I have some sympathy. I don't even have sympathy for the Cleveland Browns. I think they made their own problems. But Detroit Lions. And the other one is, because of my long-term friendship with R-Squared over here, for those of you who don't know, R-Squared, despite being raised in the winterlands of west of Massachusetts, is a hardcore Giants fan. And he's not a guy – he's not a pink hat. He has been with them when they've won. He's been with them when they've lost.
Since I was 2 years old, brother.
He he does not care. Win, lose, or draw, he's a Giants man. Matter of fact, 20 years ago when he first started his career and when he was stationed in Red Bank, New Jersey at Fort Monmouth, which doesn't even exist anymore, right? I think when they shut down Fort Monmouth. He one of the people in the office had some extra tickets, and we went to see a Giants game at the old Giants Stadium, not the MetLife Stadium, the Cement Donut. So
baseball game against the Vikings, you remember that?
Right. Yes. Oh, good God! Oh, how could I forget? But the last preface of the show, this man is a hardcore Giants fan. And Sinister One and I are hardcore Patriots, and we're not. I'm not really. I'm a later convert. But Sinister One, but R-Squared is our equivalent. What is going on with your Giants, Rob? Are they trying to spend as much money as possible and get nothing for it? I'm just curious.
Well, we've already talked about the folder disaster, so what else is there at this point?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, are they laundering money for the Cali cartel? Is that the point? I mean, have they made one decent trade, one decent draft? They have, shut me up. Say, Ken, you're missing the point. We got these other guys over here.
We did talk about this when we did the draft show, and I think obviously the Giants needed so much help. There's no way that they can go from worst to even decent in one season. It's going to take them at least 2 years to do it, there's no even pipe dream of a playoff run this year, no matter what happens to Dallas or anybody else in that division. But what they did was they drafted okay. They got I think a lot of the scores gave them an AA- on their draft. I'd say they got at least a B+, A- on their draft. So that was good. What they didn't do as great is what we'll see is did they pick up enough people in trades or free agency? They did pick up Ogletree from the Rams. That was a good defensive pickup. They picked up your boy Solder from the Patriots, which as we lambasted them for was an overpriced mistake. But he's a great player. So we'll see. Time will tell whether that was foolish or whether that bought them a couple of years of plugging the hole on the offensive line. So we just don't know. But their draft was decent. They did pick up some players. I can't name them all at this point because I wasn't looking at the NFL for today. But they improved themselves significantly. They're going to win more than three games this year. Here's what I'll tell you. I mean, I don't want to get off track. But the biggest thing that the problem is Odell Beckham Jr., okay? Number one, this will be – he's been in the league now long enough that he needs to behave himself. He needs to keep his damn mouth shut and he needs to get out there and play. He does want to play and he's immensely talented, but he's his own worst enemy with getting himself into situations because of his mouth and his injuries. So I'll tell you what, the level of play for the Giants this year is not about any of the trades and team management. They made the right moves. Let's see what they can win, but it's all going to be up to Beckham this year. Whether they can at least break 500.
Okay. All right. Stuff. Maybe I was wrong. I'm willing to admit, because apparently you think the Giants did better in the drafting than I was giving them a C-, but you're telling me I'm wrong. And
no, I felt the Giants had a pretty good draft. I felt like they had a pretty good draft.
But I agree. I think they overpaid for Nate Solder. That's my problem. They overpaid for these people. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. Right. Maybe it's the fact that, you know, you have to. You know, we know we're not going to be great, but we need to pay these guys so we can at least show some respectability and improvement. You know, the old saying from a friend of mine who's an ultramarathon runner who likes to say forward progress is progress. So if they can break 500, I think that would be a big show of progress. Can they break 500?
I think they probably are in a position. I've got to look at the schedule again, but I remember when I looked at it when it first came out, I was thinking this could be a 6-win season for them, which is not great, but it's a dramatic improvement from last year, and that sets them up nicely to figure out the one or two big moves they're going to have to make for the following season, plus a continuation of building the offensive line with some small moves. And I think in 2 years they could be, you know, at a 9 or 10 win season, and that puts them in a potential playoff run based on a couple of extra lucky wins, you know.
So, oh, yeah, there's no question about it. You post 9 or 10 wins, no offense, in the NFC East, which isn't a particularly powerful division. I would say you're pretty much guaranteed a wild card spot. You know.
Well, we'll see. You know, I mean,
unless somebody gets hot towards the end.
Yeah. But my point is, if they do next year what they did this year in the rebuilding mode, I think in a couple of years they could be back there and at least competitive, and then we'll have to see where they go from there.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Hey, I was able to see Deadpool 2, guys, this past weekend. I don't know anybody else was able to catch it. Marvel is just kicking butt. Ant-Man and the Wasp opens this weekend, and Marvel is just killing everybody in the box office. But we had talked about the Comcast deal with Disney and stuff and how that's going to relate. And when we got off the air last week, Comcast lost the bid. Disney and Fox came to an agreement, and Disney went and bid $71.2 billion, which was like, I want to say it was like $8 billion more than what Comcast had put in. The board, I don't think, has anybody heard, has the board come back? Has the Disney board come back on the approval on that?
The rumor is, well, that's interesting. I'm hearing that they had the votes going in, but there's been some problem with the due diligence regarding certain financial statements, which could be just a couple of members of the board being pissed that they overpaid, and I think they did.
Well, they had to overpay, because, come on, Comcast pockets are deep. You have to go deep. You have to.
I know, but the point is Disney's having a big problem with their cash flow, that all their assets are long term. They'll make a lot of money in the long term.
Oh yeah,
but you know, unfortunately, the board members aren't concerned about long term. They're concerned about next quarter's earnings. And Disney is getting roasted. I mean, roasted alive. We've talked about this in the past on their mishandling the Star Wars franchise.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I am hearing. Here's a rumor that I'm hearing. And before I say this, this is 12th hand hearsay. I can't find anybody with any what I would consider respectable knowledge of the industry that has confirmed this, but the rumor is going around that Disney may spin off the Star Wars franchise or sell it off entirely.
I can't see that. They've invested.
I know, that's what I was not saying. It's 12 million, but apparently they are not getting the returns on the Solo movie tanking. The Return of the Jedi didn't do as well as they were hoping for. With the death of Carrie Fisher, the question is, what are they going to do for the next movie? There's supposed to be a third movie in the trilogy to set up the next generation, but I'm already hearing noises that the character they're expecting to carry on the trilogy may not be back. So they may, you know, what are you going to do at that point? Do you go back and do a lot of prequels along the lines of Rogue One? You know, do you go back and try to create a whole new generation of Star Wars? What do you do? Because apparently they're not making the money they're hoping for.
Oh, I was just going to make the point. You know, what we saw with the last few movies, I mean, Solo, but that was an outlier because it was a special story as opposed to continuation. But
yes. The
biggest difference between the originals, which I realize is 4, 5, and 6, not 1, 2, and 3 – But with the originals and now is somehow in the more recently made movies, they lost the magic of the original ones. And I understand that some of that is time. In 1977, that was an incredibly unique movie by subject line. I mean, by subject, by plot, by special effects, by everything. And it was just incredibly magical for a whole generation or multiple generations mm-hmm. of people. And then people couldn't wait, you know, so you had the original 3, 4, 5, and 6 that really just have a special place in movie history. Then they obviously failed when they went to do 1, 2, and 3, the whole Jar Jar Binks fiasco and everything else. And it just, there was just no way to maintain it. And then you've got the other movies. So right now, if you compare the newer movies to the first ones they made, 4, 5, and 6, you're never going to win. They're never going to win. I don't think anybody can figure out. And whoever does is a genius who deserves every penny they make off of it. But if anybody can recreate that package of magic that made the first three movies special, is fine. But I don't see that there's a way to do that. I think they've lost that. There's just too much out there right now. There's nothing that unique, nothing that special. The characters aren't as likable. The stories are kind of familiar. You know, there's just they can't draw on any of those things from the original ones. And so I don't know that there's anything anybody can do. I know there's a lot of criticism that Disney is politicizing it or making it whatever. I don't know if I believe that or not, but they're certainly not good anymore. And I think because they just can't recreate it. Nobody can.
Right, exactly.
Well, I agree with the fact that they can't recreate it, but Disney has managed. Well, they made a couple of things. Number one, they took – pardon me. Hold on a second. I apologize. They – one of the first things they did – that was my bad. I am sorry. One of the things they did was they took all of the previous Star Wars canon and said, we're throwing on this trash heap history. It's no longer canon. Now they politely refer to it as the extended universe. So that was their first mistake, and they just pissed – and then they came in and they read or they brought in people who had no familiarity with the properties and openly said they had utter contempt. Rian Johnson said he had utter contempt for the history and was not going to be influenced by anything that went beforehand, and that's really – and not only that, they're more geared towards selling toys, and that's their whole focus. Their whole focus has been the merchandising first. And I think that, you know, the Pogs from The Last Jedi. But here's the thing. Rogue One. Did you guys see that?
Yes.
Okay. Which was an incredible movie. Very sad for those who haven't seen it, but great movie. They did it right. So they know how to do it. They're just choosing not to do it. And Rogue One was based very closely on the book. But I don't know if you've read – there's a book out there, Rogue One. And they cut a few scenes out and a couple of characters were condensed. But it was very close to the book, very, very close. I've read the book. So I think there is a possibility of doing it right, but I just don't think they want to do it right. They want to dumb it down. They want to get more action there because they're looking at the foreign market, especially the Chinese market. And the ongoing theory is there should be less dialogue because the Chinese can't speak English, although frankly that's not true. They speak English better than we do. And they have this like the action scenes. They're trying to cram as much action as possible because that's what sells tickets in China. And I've heard this from a number of people who have told me that. That's why Solo was written the way it was. That's why The Last Jedi was written the way it was because they didn't want you to have heavy dialogue. They didn't want character development because our market in China is not going to understand that. And they figured the Star Wars population would go see anything we put up there. Regardless of how good or bad it is.
You know, I mean, I think that's a good point. I just don't know how intense the dialogue was in 4, 5, and 6 either. I think it was the whole package of, you know, there was a lot of action. I mean, you're right what they're doing. You could see the difference. But I don't know that they need necessarily to go into this incredible, you know, dialogue. I think they're just missing something. The movies just don't have it.
No, yeah. It's called a structure. It's called a plot. It's called characters we care about.
That's what I'm saying. The characters aren't likable. The acting isn't good.
Think about this. When Yoda came on the scene, I mean, had anyone ever seen anything like that?
Yeah, no. The Muppet. It was a Muppet.
It was a Muppet. But I mean, seriously.
But there was no Yoda character in any movie before. No. That's what you're saying.
Right. My point is, yeah, I mean, but that, you know, that's my I'll get off my soapbox right now because I'm a hardcore Star Wars fan. I'm just, you know, beside myself what they're doing. So.
Oh, we're at 8:05. We got to get ready to get out of here. Tomorrow's the 4th of July. I'm going to try to relax and enjoy my day. I have to work tomorrow night, so we'll see what happens. But I want to go around the horn and say goodbye.
Okay. Who's first? Me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, wishing everyone a happy, safe, and cool 4th of July. If you're listening to us in the Northeast, Ray, right now, to quote my grandfather, I'm spritzing! I'm spritzing! Happy birthday to my cousin Sherry Siegel, who turned 25 on June 30th. That's an inside joke for the family. The rest of us, don't worry about it. She's more than 25. And to all of our listeners, all 12 of them, be safe, guys.
Hi, Squid.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, everybody have a very safe July 4th. You know, be safe at your barbecues and everything else that you're going to do. And, you know, enjoy a special day. I'm looking forward to it tomorrow. Hopefully the rain will hold off here. We're supposed to get thunderstorms right in the afternoon, but if all goes well, I'll be helping the mayor of our city hoist the flag at 5 o'clock tomorrow night. So I'm excited about that. And then we have our fireworks show that evening. So, no rain.
Cool. So everybody, hey, be safe for the 4th. Have a good weekend, and we'll be back here next week with more Booth. And, I think Travis is the only one that was in the, chat tonight, because we weren't able to really share the link to the show tonight because of us getting on right at the, you know, the opening of the show. So, you know, we weren't able to do what we needed to do. So all I got to say is, hey, everybody, have a good 4th. Be safe. And SpongeBob, do me a favor. Take us home.
See you next Tuesday.
Thanks for tuning into the Booth at TheBazoo.com. Please make sure to tune in for more Booth next Tuesday night at 7 p.m. New York Eastern Standard Time. Become a fan on their Facebook page and check out their podcast on iTunes and iHeartRadio. The Booth is a Sinista One production hosted by Sinista One, Ken Diesel, and R Squared.
I've got to start hanging out with friends that are a little more intelligent and understand politics and stuff. It's just that I'm up on this level up here, and all my friends are down here. Me, nah. You guys, nah. Maybe a little more down in here. Screw you guys. I'm going home.